The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Geico presents a voicemail from your friend, Water.
Hey, it's me, Water. Look, about what happened in your apartment with a broken pipe. I just wanted to apologize for ruining all your stuff, and I hope this can all just be some me under the bridge someday. Oh, and also, I'm not paying for anything. Okay, bye.
Water never pays for water damage. Luckily, the Geico Insurance Agency makes getting coverage a snap. Visit geico.com to see how affordable renter's insurance can be.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Has President Trump's use of Twitter gone too far?
I think it's so blatantly sexist, I don't even know that there's a question about it.
This is a president who fights fire with fire.
The return of President Trump's travel ban, part of it anyway. I'm Sam Litzinger at CBS News in Washington. Not long after he was elected, Donald Trump told the CBS News program 60 Minutes he was rethinking his frequent use of Twitter.
I'm going to do very restrained if I use it at all.
That hasn't happened. Thursday morning, the president went after MSNBC's Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough, calling her low IQ crazy Mika and him psycho Joe. He also claimed to have seen Brzezinski bleeding badly from a facelift. CBS News correspondent Stephen Portnoy.
A White House spokeswoman defends the president's tweet, saying her boss won't be bullied by the media. But several congressional Republicans have blasted the president. House Speaker Paul Ryan said the tweet about Mika Brzezinski was obviously inappropriate. Oklahoma Senator Jim Lankford says the comments do not provide a positive role model for our national dialogue. And Kansas GOP Congresswoman Lynn Jenkins says this is not okay.
House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi says enough.
The tweets of the president of the United States, they set a low standard for public officials in terms of their demeanor. It's really sad, though. It's the president of the United States.
White House spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders tells Fox News the president has never been someone who gets attacked and doesn't push back. She says she's been personally attacked on MSNBC's Morning Joe.
I've been called a lot of names on that show that don't have anything to do with my beliefs or ideology or policy, but they're personal attacks.
Brzezinski and Scarborough now question what they call Mr. Trump's unmoored behavior and his fitness to be president.
We're okay. The country's not.
They accuse him of blackmail over press coverage. Mr. Trump claims Scarborough asked him to stop a National Enquirer article, and he said no. More to come, we expect. President Trump tweeted his pleasure at a Supreme Court decision that restored part of his controversial travel ban that prohibits some people from six Muslim-majority countries from coming to the U.S. Some states are already challenging it in the courts. CBS News correspondent Jan Crawford tells us people are trying to figure out exactly who is and isn't affected and what it means in terms of the ban to have what's called a close family relationship that would allow certain people to enter the U.S.
You know, they say that the devil's in the details, right? And the Supreme Court said that people with a close, bona fide relationship with someone in the U.S. would not be covered by this ban. So what's the close relationship mean? We've now got some guidance from the State Department, and they're saying that a close family relationship would include, say, a parent, spouse, child, or sibling who's already in the United States.
Iran's foreign minister has denounced the partial reinstatement of the travel ban is a truly shameful exhibition of blind hostility to all Iranians and a measure that will prevent Iranian grandmothers from seeing their grandchildren in America. The U.S. is imposing tougher security measures on some international airlines. CBS News correspondent Jeff Begay says the goal is to stay one step ahead of the terrorists.
Inaction is not an option.
The threat to aviation is so severe, Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly issued this warning to airports and airlines operating overseas.
Those who choose not to cooperate or are slow to adopt these measures could be subject to other restrictions, including a ban on electronic devices on aircraft or even a suspension of their flights into the United States.
The new measures apply to flights to the U.S. from 280 airports in 105 countries. Among the changes, enhancing overall passenger screening, increasing security protocols around aircraft and in passenger areas, expanding the use of bomb-detecting dogs, and perhaps most importantly, heightened screening of personal electronic devices.
We are taking prudent steps to make aircraft more secure, to reduce insider threats, and to identify suspicious passengers.
The enhanced security comes after U.S. intelligence determined more terrorists are learning how to build an explosive hidden in a laptop like the bomb that detonated on a flight in Somalia last year. In March, the Trump administration banned large electronics in the cabins of airplanes traveling to the U.S. from 10 airports in Africa and the Middle East.
After meeting with South Korea's president at the White House, President Trump says he's lost patience with North Korea and its nuclear missile program. He says he's working on steps to deal with what he calls this menace. CBS News correspondent Seth Doan says a top advisor to Pope Francis, Cardinal George Pell from Australia, is now facing sexual assault charges, bringing for the first time a criminal case into the long abuse scandal inside the Vatican.
I'm innocent of these charges. They are false. The whole idea of sexual abuse is abhorrent to me.
Australian police did not provide any specific details of the multiple charges of sexual assault. Cardinal George Pell has been in charge of reforming church finances, but for years has faced allegations that he did not properly deal with clergy sex abuse in Australia. He was questioned by a commission investigating the church's response to abuse via video link from Rome.
With the experience of 40 years later, certainly I would agree that I should have done more.
Why do you need the experience of 40 years later? Wasn't it a serious matter then?
Yes, but people had a different attitude to them.
Pell told reporters he has been in regular contact with Pope Francis,
the Holy Father, regularly informed,
who has granted him leave to return to Australia for his day in court in mid-July.
How big of a blow are these charges to the Catholic Church?
This is a major blow.
Robert Mickens, with Catholic publication La Croix International, has been covering the Vatican for 25 years.
You have to understand that the Vatican language is always going to be very much more conciliatory. Cardinal Pell said the Pope has given him a leave of absence. It's very likely that the Pope stood him down.
Chicago police and federal agents are now collaborating in an initiative to stop the flow of illegal guns into the city as part of efforts to curb rampant violence. President Trump tweeted that crime and killings in Chicago have reached such epidemic proportions that I am sending in federal help. On this 4th of July weekend, CBS News correspondent Steve Kathan debunks some fake news about American history.
Ask any school kid and they'll say Betsy Ross, a Philadelphia seamstress, stitched together the first U.S. flag. It's a memorable tale with a great heroine, a plucky widow doing her part for the revolution.
And it would be wonderful if it were true, but it's a myth.
Mark Leibson authored the book Flag, an American biography.
America did not know the name Betsy Ross until 1870.
That's when her grandson made the claim on her behalf, but he offered no credible documentation. So why did the story catch on?
America was looking for heroic stories of our history in a time when the nation was binding up the wounds of the Civil War.
Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Now about George Washington and that cherry tree. The Senate Majority Leader hits the pause button on a Republican health care plan. President Trump says maybe repeal Obamacare now, replace it later. That and more on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell can count, and the numbers didn't add up for passage of that Republican health care bill, so he decided not to hold a vote. He'll keep at it. A tweet from a New Jersey mom has put a very young face on the fight over the Senate health care bill. Ali Chandra shared a photo of the giant medical bill for her 2-year-old son for a 10-day stay in the hospital. CBS News correspondent Maria Villarreal says it went viral.
How did you get a scar?
A big one.
Does it hurt?
No.
Ethan Chandra was born with 9 congenital heart defects and his organs in the wrong place. He had his first heart surgery at just 6 days old.
5 surgeries, 2 heart catheterizations, another diagnostic procedure under anesthesia. He doesn't know any other life.
Did you ever ask yourself, how am I going to pay for this?
I didn't have to.
Can you bring your pouring station over, bud?
The Chandra family is covered by employer-provided private insurance. But Ethan's fight to get better gave his mother, Ali Chandra, perspective on the battle over health care.
I'm not sitting here telling you that the ACA is perfect. It's not. When I say I'm thankful for Obamacare, I What I mean is I'm thankful that there's a set of laws that tell the insurance companies, look, this is what you need to cover. You need to cover essential health benefits.
Under the Affordable Care Act, insurance plans must meet a minimum standard of coverage. This includes a set of essential health benefits.
The plans that you offer need to cover prescription medications, hospitalizations, specialist visits.
Senate will come to order.
Under the proposed Senate bill, some benefits could be removed from a state's definition of essential health benefits.
He's not a line in a budget.
Chandra tweeted her 2-year-old's last hospital bill for open-heart surgery and a 10-day stay. The total? More than $230,000. Luckily, insurance negotiated and covered the majority, leaving the Chandras with just $500 to pay.
Take one at a time out.
After tweeting, Chandra was surprised to find out how much their story resonated with others.
The Chandra family is probably better off than many because at this point today, they have what seems like a pretty good employer-sponsored plan. And the odds are their employer will keep their plan.
Columbia University health policy professor Michael Sparer says there are still a lot of uncertainties with the proposed bill.
There are a lot of other folks, though, a lot of other folks who may be buying health insurance on the exchanges right now, or a lot of other folks who are on Medicaid who might be even more nervous than the Chandra family because they truly may be in a situation where they will be priced out of health insurance very quickly.
Ethan will take medication for the rest of his life and will likely need more procedures. Chandra hopes lawmakers will keep working to improve health care and its cost for all Americans.
I don't think that right now our government is looking out for us, and I think we need to come together and demand that they do better.
Even though she is under an employer plan, Chandra told us when her husband changed jobs last year, their premiums almost quadrupled. Critics often cite high premiums as the Obamacare's flaws. Chandra says while she knows the ACA has its problems, she doesn't think the proposed GOP health plan is any better right now.
It's fair to say the National Democratic Party is looking for direction these days. Since President Trump took office, the Democrats have lost 4 important special elections, and some of them are blaming the party leadership. And some are blaming one person in particular. She spoke with our colleagues at CBS this morning.
House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi became a member of Congress through a special election 30 years ago. She has led House Democrats for the last 14 years, including a stint as the first female speaker. But the Democratic Party's losing streak in recent special elections prompted some House colleagues to question her leadership.
Nancy Pelosi was a great speaker. She is a great leader, but her time has come and gone.
I think it's time for change, and these election results frankly show that.
If we're going to regain the majority in 2018, we have to have new leadership.
You That's think right. Nancy Pelosi is more toxic than Donald Trump?
You know what? The honest answer is, in some areas of the country, yes, she is. That's the honest answer.
Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi, good morning.
Good morning.
You want to respond to what
you just said? Well, I mean, it's like I'm here and we're hearing all these other people. They had their time on TV. This is such a small item. It isn't about me. Right now, our fight is about the Affordable Care Act. I've always had a challenge in the caucus right from the start when I was first
elected. But let's look at this, too. You have been losing special elections.
Okay.
And 4 of them, and people say it's because the Democratic Party, of which you are leader, has no message. Your only message is anti-Trump.
No, that isn't true. First of all, let me just say, these are 4 races we would never have chosen to go into. They were chosen by Donald Trump. 4 races where double-digit lead for the Republicans in previous elections. We picked up 70 points, 25 and 1 race, 15, 20, like that, in the 4 races. The people in those states are very happy because we pushed the Republicans very far back. Me, I like to win. But this was, the people in Georgia worked very hard, in Montana, all of those places, and they've made great progress leading up to their
government.
No, but they lost. But again, there are 70 races that are easier for us than any of those. We would never have chosen to go in. There was so much excitement in the country to act against the election in November. So this isn't, these people were against me last November. They started this before. The fact is this. I led in 05 and 06 to take us to the majority, became Speaker of the House. President Obama became president. He was our spokesperson for 8 years. We just lost the election. We could write a message, but the fact is we need our members to write the message. And they know full well that that is something we're working with the Senate to go forward.
Why don't you think you should step aside?
Let me tell you why I should stay instead.
Okay. Right.
Because I'm a master legislator. I'm experienced in terms of knowing the institutional memory of the Congress. If Hillary Clinton had won, I might have gone home. But with Donald Trump in the White House, with a Republican majority in both houses, no way.
After President Trump won, President Obama came out. I remember being at the White House, and he said Democrats are characterized as coastal, liberal, latte-sipping, politically correct, out-of-touch folks. We have to be in those communities. How do you do that in 2018?
Well, he was just president for 8 years. I don't think he was describing himself
He was describing the challenge you have in 2018.
Well, we always have a challenge. And that is, again, I take it back to the Affordable Care Act. So many people benefited from it. Some of them voted for Donald Trump. So we have to, I say to people, it happens with your spouse as well. Mm-hmm. If you think you're communicating and they don't think you're communicating, you're not communicating. So it isn't about our agenda. It isn't even about our message. It's about our communication of it.
That's Nancy Pelosi. The White House says President Trump will hold a high-stakes meeting with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, when he attends the G20 summit in Germany in a few days. The meeting is one of several the president has scheduled when he's in Hamburg, Germany. You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. ISIS is on its last legs in Raqqa, the Syrian city it proclaimed as its de facto capital. That does not mean the long Syrian civil war is over, but it suggests ISIS terrorists may focus more on attacking civilians than on defending territory. CBS News correspondent Holly Williams and her crew paid a dangerous visit to Raqqa as Syrian rebel forces closed in.
Just 3 weeks ago, walking the streets of Raqqa would have been suicidal for an American TV crew. But now ISIS is losing its grip, besieged by U.S. coalition airstrikes and America's allies on the ground. A ragtag army known as the Syrian Democratic Forces. In more than 3 years under ISIS control, Raqqa became a killing field. American journalists were beheaded nearby. Others were crucified or thrown from buildings. And even now, the extremists are deadly. As part of our team moved forward, they were spotted by an ISIS sniper.
Keep going.
Our producer, Omar Abdulkader, had no choice but to make a run for it.
That was close.
They were safe, but pinned down by at least two snipers.
So we are hoping either to get an armored vehicle to take us out from here, or probably when it gets a little bit darker.
But then came word there was a suspected ISIS suicide car bomber nearby. 400 yards away, these fighters told us they'd lost five soldiers to one of the bombs the day before.
They're worried that a suicide car bomber is coming towards the point where we were just sitting. So they've asked us to move over here to take cover.
It turned out to be a false alarm. And minutes later, this homemade armor-plated car arrived to ferry our stranded team to safety. A close call with ISIS, even as its so-called Islamic State crumbles.
When you hear the phrase air war, you may think of fighter jets or bombers zooming overhead, attacking targets in the sky or on the ground. But that phrase has a new meaning these days. The U.S. military is using drones to go after militants. That was Brent Velikovich's job. He's the author of Drone Warrior, an elite soldier's inside account of the hunt for America's most dangerous enemies, And he spoke with our colleagues at CBS this morning.
I rose through the ranks fairly fast, and I was given a really incredible responsibility with some of these more elite organizations that I worked with to really essentially hunt down some of the world's most evil people. And so my job was specifically to choose these targets and then find them so that they could either be captured or killed.
But there's a chain of command in terms of approval on those targets.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the levels that we were at, especially in the war zones that I operated in, that delegation was brought to the lowest levels. You know, if somebody like me was dealing with the politics of the decision-making process of who should do what, then we weren't doing our job.
In the book, you call the head of ISIS, al-Baghdadi, the smartest terrorist you've ever hunted.
Well, considering that, you know, despite the fact that he's one of the most evil human beings on the planet, and I had to watch the terrible things that he did, we made him very paranoid. We were capturing, killing guys around him, you know, watching the things that he did on a daily basis and really getting it to understand the mindset of how he operated. And the fact is, for him to be able to stay alive after all of the things that we did over these years and all of the things that the great men and women that were in the positions I was were doing against his organization, that takes a brilliant mind, because when you're on our list, you're on a bad day. Well, I think, you know, there were some recent reports that maybe Baghdadi had been killed by the Russians within the last couple of weeks. And the Baghdadi I know, he doesn't stay anywhere for 2 weeks. You know, he doesn't stay anywhere for a month at a time. He's not this U.S. general that's surrounded by all these different lieutenants under him and other people. He is moving constantly. And we, as a operational task force to go after him, we had to move like he did. And so our organization was built in a way that could be as mobile as they were, because, you know, terrorists aren't taking the weekends off.
Yeah, and you said you're not the one that actually pulled the trigger, but because of your intelligence, the unit that you were with, you were making the decisions. But you said you became desensitized to death, even though you're not the one actually pulling the actual trigger.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
think about it. You know, never before in the history of the world have we had this ability to know so much about our enemy. And that's one of the things that drone technology was able to give me so that I could hunt these guys down. And with that, you see some very terrible things that these guys are doing, but you also see the humanity in it. I see the ISIS leader that's, you know, driving his kids to the bus stop. Well, you know, a few hours later, he's then driving a car into a marketplace to kill innocent people. I see some of the worst things on earth, and that's the job that I signed up to do. And with that, it's hard to disconnect yourself from it. So it took years for me to be able to do that.
Are they going to have access to the same kind of technology that we have so that they can use technology, the internet, in the same way that we do?
Well, I think in some ways they use it a little better than us. I mean, they don't have to play by the same rules we do. And that's why you see groups like ISIS now that are modifying commercial consumer drones and weaponizing them in a way that is better than even certain governments have.
Do you think we'll catch Baghdadi?
In my opinion, Baghdadi's already dead. He just doesn't even know it. It's just a matter of time.
A new report suggests a lot of people could stand to rethink their perceptions of African-American girls. Researchers have found that many adults think black girls know more about adult topics and sex than white girls. The Georgetown Law Center on Poverty and Inequality conducted the study. Dr. Jamelia Blake is one of the authors. She's Associate Professor of Educational Psychology at Texas A&M University.
Beginning at age 5, black girls were seen as exhibiting more adult qualities than were white girls. And we've seen that this pattern continued all the way up to age 15 to the 19 age bracket. So we're seeing that adults are perceiving black girls as exhibiting adult-like qualities as early as age 5 and not being innocent and not, you know, needing nurturing or support.
Dr. Blake says it's not clear why some adults think like this.
One reason that a number of scholars, including myself, think that black girls are overdisciplined is because the stereotypes about black women as being aggressive and defiant and hypersexualized are mapped onto black girls. But we really have this missing link as to why that's occurring. And so we built off some prior research that found that black boys were being seen as less innocent and seeing as adult at age 10.
Dr. Blake wants to see more research that gets deeper into perceptions of black girls.
What I believe is just that there is this pervasive stereotype about black women and adults, and we're mapping it onto children. So we're not treating black girls as children. We're seeing them as young adults, and that's what this data shows. But we haven't had conversations and interviews to really investigate why people might feel this way. And it could be an implicit bias. that they're not even aware that they hold these perceptions about black girls. We're really robbing black girls of their childhood.
Dr. Jamelia Blake is Associate Professor of Educational Psychology at Texas A&M University. Please follow us on Twitter. We have headlines at CBS Radio News, and I'm at Sam Litzinger on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. You've heard of the problems the folks in Flint, Michigan face when it comes to getting clean water. Other parts of the country now have the same worry. What's in our water, anyway? CBS News correspondent Jerika Duncan says in North Carolina, there's concern about a chemical called Gen X.
This Fayetteville plant, 80 miles upstream from Wilmington, is where Gen X is manufactured by DuPont and Chemours. Company officials recently revealed the chemical has been released into the river for nearly four decades.
It caught us all off guard.
Wilmington Mayor Bill Saffo.
We don't know what this is going to do to us that have been drinking it for long periods of time.
A three-year study by North Carolina State University and the EPA out this past fall showed an elevated presence of Gen X in Wilmington's tap water, but the findings weren't publicly disclosed until this month.
So I ask all of you to keep this going until our water is clean.
Last week's city council meeting was standing room only.
Why has this been allowed to go on for so long? I've been drinking this water my entire life.
The long-term health effects of Gen X are unknown, but studies submitted by DuPont to the EPA have shown it caused tumors and reproductive problems in lab animals.
What are you going to do now?
Lisa Grogan's son Nathan battled a rare kidney cancer. She, like many other parents of children with cancer in the area, aren't pointing fingers, but are wondering whether toxins in their drinking water were the cause.
Because of what our kids have been through, I think it's hard for people to look at us and say, the water's probably okay. We're not willing to accept that risk.
Amy Herman's son, Jacob, had leukemia.
It just seems odd that we're having to fight for clean water, you know, after we've fought for our children's lives.
There are currently no federal drinking water standards for Gen X. And under EPA rules, DuPont and Chemours release of Gen X into the water may have been perfectly legal. That's because it's a byproduct of another substance.
There is a loophole that needs to be looked at by Congress to make certain that we have safe, good drinking water in this country.
State inspectors are now testing the current levels of Gen X in Wilmington's water, and the EPA is also investigating.
We as citizens of this nation need to know what those chemicals are, so at least we can make decisions for our own families as to whether we should drink the water or not.
Chemours says it will no longer release the byproduct of Gen X into the Cape Fear River, and they believe that product has not had an impact on the safety of drinking water in Wilmington. The North Carolina Department of Health said it will take a look at cancer rates, specifically in this region.
From concerns about what's in our water to concerns about what many of us are putting on our bodies. Health officials are getting more and more reports of side effects apparently caused by some of the chemicals we use every day. A new research letter by JAMA Internal Medicine highlights the issue. Dr. Tara Narula spoke with our colleagues at CBS this morning.
So what kind of products are we talking about? What reactions are you worried about?
These are products that we probably all used at some point this morning. Deodorant, moisturizers,
yes.
Makeup, hair care products, perfumes. They're very common. We use them every day for years. And
is it certain brands or any kind of deodorant?
It could be potentially any brand. It's basically this industry of cleansing, beautification, and changing our appearance. That's the industry we're talking about. And so the concern raised by this letter was basically that there are about 396 adverse events reported every year. And that probably is the tip of the iceberg, because we know that research has shown that usually less than 10% of adverse events are really reported. Mm-hmm. And in this industry, there is really very minimal safety oversight. I think that's surprising to a lot of people to learn. In 2015 to 2016, this jump that you talked about was primarily from three different product lines, hair care, skin care, and tattoos. And the complaints can range from skin irritation, rashes, hair loss, allergic reactions, and then longer-term concerns about cancer, reproductive problems, and endocrine disruptions.
Is there push for more oversight?
I think there needs to be on some level more information and more oversight. The problem now, really to understand, Charlie, is that there's no need for pre-market safety approval. Manufacturers don't need to report to the FDA if there are complaints. There is no need to register products. There's no need to give the FDA ingredients. So what has happened is that we've created a situation of passive surveillance where products get put on the market and then we wait for complaints to arise. And then the FDA can investigate. And even in that situation, they really don't recall products from the market.
Well, you would hope that most people would use deodorant and hair care. So is there something that we should be looking at when we go to buy these products?
Yeah. It would be nice if there really was, but it's very hard for consumers to navigate this because there are thousands of chemicals that make up all kinds of ingredients. The manufacturers don't have to list the ingredients because they can be called trade secrets or special formulations. The chemicals.
So what are we supposed to do, Tara?
So the dermatologist we spoke to, who was one of the authors of this letter, basically suggested keeping it simple. So pick products that have the fewest ingredients, so least likely to cause reactions. Pick products that have chemicals that have been around, kind of tried, true, and tested over years, not necessarily the newest, most exciting chemical or ingredient. You also want to pick products that are dye-free, preservative-free, fragrance-free. And clearly, if you have an issue, I think the big reason for this letter was to say report it. Report it to the FDA. Report it to the manufacturer. The FDA has a website you can go to, the Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, where you can fill out an online form. And the more data we have, as the author said, if we can't measure it, we can't manage it. That's what we need to do.
You ever think about retiring early? Well, it depends on how much you like your job, of course, or how much you hate it. But it can be done with some work. Yahoo Finance reporter Melanie Hom spoke with our colleagues at CBSN about what it takes, financially speaking, to quit your job early and survive.
Keep in mind that jobs offer 401k accounts. That is for you to offer pre-tax contributions, and it saves a lot down the road. You know, if you're under 49 years old, you can pay up to $18,000 a year, and if you're over 50, $24,000 a year in annual contributions, and that will accrue over time, and it's just free money waiting to be invested.
But Melody, when it comes to those 401ks and the IRA accounts, they do have annual contribution limits. So how can you make sure you're saving enough?
You can max out as much as possible, but also you can start the IRA or the Roth IRA on the side as well. So if you've maxed out on your 401k and you've contributed the $18,000 a year, you can start, open up an IRA or a Roth IRA and put in additional income if you are so lush and flush with cash.
Right. But if you decide to withdraw money at all from your IRA before you're 59, there are penalties.
Yeah, there's a 10% early withdrawal fee, and that is a big deterrent. But honestly, that shouldn't be the reason you should stop contributing to your account, thinking that you're going to retire early. It's sort of nonsensical. But keep in mind that with Roth IRAs, there is no early withdrawal fee. So that's a great way for you to maybe, if you retire at 45, you can live off of that for a while, and then you can tap into your 401k when you retire. A Roth IRA is definitely a good alternative for people who are planning to stop working earlier on than most of us.
You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Like what you're hearing? Get even more great content from CBS Radio News Podcasts. Listen to TV broadcasts like The Evening News and Face the Nation on demand. Or hear original audio programming like our Week in Review show, The Weekend Roundup. You can also hear the story behind the story on Reporter's Notebook or What's Hot on Tech Talk with Larry Magid. Get these podcasts and more from iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play today.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. This is the anniversary of a device many of us think we probably couldn't live without, although, amazingly, many of us did live without it until it was introduced 10 years ago. Happy birthday, iPhone. David Pogue with Yahoo Tech takes us back to a primitive time before the late Steve Jobs changed the world.
And we are calling it iPhone.
That iPhone wouldn't actually go on sale for another 6 months. During that time, nobody outside Apple was allowed to see the phone or touch the phone. And then, 2 weeks before the phone went on sale, Apple quietly handed iPhones to four tech reporters to review. Stephen Levy, then of Newsweek, Ed Begg of USA Today, Walt Mossberg, then of The Wall Street Journal, and me, then of The New York Times.
We had 2 days between the time our review came out and the thing went on sale. I've never been more popular in my life. I wish I had this thing in high school, you know?
In celebration of the iPhone's 10th birthday, the first four people outside Apple ever to use an iPhone sat down to reminisce.
Steve called us all while we had it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, we're walking down the street.
He called me multiple times a day. Mm-hmm. How's it going? Mm-hmm. I go, Steve, it's not the way I do reviews. I'll call you. Yeah. I said, we'll talk, but don't worry about it.
There's an app for that.
A year after the iPhone came out, Apple introduced the App Store, a central catalog of free or cheap little programs written by programmers all over the world. That's when iPhone sales really went through the stratosphere.
And if you want to check where exactly you parked the car, there's even an app for that.
And just those apps have launched entire industries. In 2008, Google created a look-alike phone design called Android, which it gives away to phone makers. Today, Android phones outsell the iPhone. So on its 10th birthday, it's time to ask, where does the iPhone fall on the scale of humanity's greatest inventions? Is it right up there with the television? The car? Electricity? Fire? Hard to say, but millions of people would agree the iPhone changed everything.
We don't have Steve Jobs around to ask. We would all be getting interviews with him now because of the 10th anniversary, but I don't think he foresaw the hugeness of it, and I don't think anybody did.
When you think of a police car, you probably think of a Ford Crown Vic or maybe a hulky SUV. You probably don't think of a smart car, one of those tiny cars you sometimes see in a city and think, hey, that's cute. CBS News correspondent Chris Van Cleef says smart cars are cute, and some of them are indeed cop cars.
This isn't the NYPD cruiser you were expecting, but the nation's biggest city is okay with that. So is Officer Odani Acevedo.
You are probably driving the world's smallest patrol car.
Yes, I am. It's probably the smallest and most compact, but it's a good ride.
A ride he uses to patrol New York's Central Park.
Where do you put the bad guy in this thing?
The smart car is intended for one officer only, so no bad guys in here. It's one of nearly 200 the NYPD uses, mostly for ticket writing and patrolling places other cars can't, like these narrow paths in Central Park.
I joke with them, you know? I make them laugh. I tell them, come see the car. I tell them, look inside. It's not as bad as you think, I tell them.
And unlike the three-wheel scooter it's replacing, the smart car comes with air conditioning and airbags. It also costs about $6,000 less.
When you went to the command staff and said, I want to add smart cars, what did they say?
They said no. They said the car looked wimpy.
But Deputy Commissioner Robert Martinez didn't see wimpy at all. He spent years trying to get this recruit into uniform.
I would call it friendly. I would call it neighborhood friendly. It's disarming, it's kissable and huggable.
Cheese!
The cuddly cruiser is proving to be a hit. The public can't seem to get enough.
What do you think of the car?
Good.
You're the center of attention out here. What's that like? You've got kids coming up and parents and people taking pictures.
Yeah, it feels good. You know, a lot of people come up to me, ask for pictures, and it's always a good feeling.
Now, this police car does not respond to emergency calls, and they're not supposed to exceed 40 miles an hour in the car. So it's not going to replace the bigger police cruisers, but it is proving that you can get pretty big things out of one very small car.
For many juvenile offenders in America, choices are pretty limited. Get caught, get parole, maybe get jail time. CBS News correspondent Michelle Miller tells us about a Massachusetts program in which young offenders get a chance to act, not act up, but act on stage.
The human mortals want their winters here.
Reciting Shakespeare is tough enough without adding fight scenes with real broadswords.
They like the huge weapons.
What baffles leads to Tanya and Puck more than anything.
It's weapons a bad is a bad idea. Yeah.
Is that they'd be trusted with a weapon at all.
So why would they do that?
I think what they're trying to do is prove that, like, even though you have a juvenile delinquent, you can trust them, and they can, like, move on from assault and battery. Also, I think it's to get our anger out.
We see the season's altar.
Titania, Queen of the Fairies, and Puck, the Sprite, are stage names we're using to protect these minors' identities. Both landed in Berkshire Juvenile Court after committing misdemeanor offenses, anything from breaking and entering to substance abuse or assault.
When I was fighting my dad, I had no clue I actually fought him until the cops came.
Faith.
This was their second chance.
So you're here in juvie court. You're sitting here before the judge. What are you thinking you're going to get?
More probation and a week or two in jail.
If Shakespeare were alive, he most definitely would probably end up in this court.
Former First Justice Paul Paracci began sentencing troubled teens to the bar 17 years ago because he saw the 16th century playwright as the ultimate outsider.
That gives him instant credibility with the kids. Shakespeare was a tyrant. He was always against the way people were doing things.
Not everyone was sold.
They think we're coddling them, whether they're placed on probation or whether they're sent away, and someday going to come out, come back, and go right back into the same environment. And if we don't help them get some new skills, they're going to continue on to a life of crime.
Arise, fair sun, and kill the envious moon.
The hope is, after 6 weeks of playing the part, something sticks. And on this night, in front of family, friends, and parole officers, all the world's a stage.
As Shakespeare wrote, age, I do abhor thee. Youth, I do adore thee. We adore you for listening to the Weekend Roundup. Please keep in mind you can do a search online to find past episodes. Search for CBS News Weekend Roundup. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. I'm Sam Litzinger, CBS News.